But now, bonus content.
What sound should we make for bonus, Tim?
Ooh, make it, Tim.
I have no, it's not my department.
That's it. It's not my department. That is the sound. If we do bonuses, here's a bonus episode, Tim. It's not my department.
That is not my department.
So every year we do Christmas recommendations.
I just wanted them to have a good, clear recording of it.
Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. I'm Charlie Carter, and I'm here with Tim Little and Andy Stearns. Let's jump into the conversation. Welcome to the Chronicles of Christmas.
Yes!
Merry Christmas.
In my mind, I hear like the bells.
I was just going to turn on a soundtrack, and I'm like, I don't want to, copyright issue, but.
So a quick editorial note here. We normally do this. We've normally done this episode as the last of a season, at least historically. We posted the Chronicles of Christmas right before everyone home for Christmas break. And then it was like, here's books to read over Christmas break. But back then we actually didn't do podcasts every week. So we like took a whole month off. And so we thought it'd be better to do our like Christmas books episode about a month before Christmas or early December to give any listener an opportunity to then take an action from what we talk about if you wanted to purchase a book for yourself or for someone else or anything like that.
So merry early Christmas.
Yeah. So this is like this, and we are recording in, we are still in November, but at the very, very end of it.
The very end.
The tail.
The last possible day.
Yes. And so we are done giving thanks, and we're turning to joyfulness of the Christmas season.
You're horrendous.
When do you think it's okay to start listening to Christmas music?
Oh no, let's move on. We don't need to talk about that.
November 1st. I've totally changed. Changed my view on that one.
He's a pagan.
Yep, that's right.
So I'm okay with like the Halloween probationary period.
Yes.
As a protest against Halloween.
Yes.
To have like, let's do Christmas instead. So like.
Tim's thought.
Christmas lights up.
Yep.
Christmas music.
Yep.
I think that would be a fun alternative. It's like people are knocking on your door and you're like, hey,
Merry Christmas.
Here's a little gift. And it's like, it's not Christmas, it's Halloween. No,
Merry, it's Reformation Christmas. Day.
Yeah. The other option would be Reformation Day.
Yeah. Like,
but so in that view, I would say on October 31st, one may indulge.
Okay.
But then they have to wait then I think you got to wait until Black Friday after that. Or maybe there's like a probationary week of Christmas music.
Because you want to have some time to really be reflecting upon Thanksgiving. Yeah. So I understand that. But anyway, if Thanksgiving's too late. It needs to be earlier in our calendar. Yeah.
I think Thanksgiving would be great.
November 1st.
They should just make it October 31st. Like we should do Reformation and then turkeys, and then it's all Christmas.
If there was just a country that did Thanksgiving earlier, we could just pattern it after that.
Yeah, like the Jewish people. It's called the Festival of Tabernacles. You know?
I was Feast of actually Beats. Thinking of the Canadians.
I know you were.
You're hilarious. All right. So you'll notice in our template here that I've added a title in the template, which is, well, there's announcements, which we've always had before. But there's
we
also,
haven't talked coffee yet.
We have. Oh, you're right.
Let me just really quick. We are drinking Christmas blend this morning from Dunn Brothers in Burlington. And okay, listener, we're a light roast crew. We love light roast. I'm curious what you guys thought of the Christmas blend. Christmas blends, if you like Starbucks Christmas blend, are typically more roasty. I really enjoy this. I feel like it's a smooth Christmas blend.
Explain roasty for us.
Like a darker, bolder, chocolatey, caramel.
That's what I thought you meant, nutty. But I wasn't very familiar with that term. Yeah.
Rather than like a sweet, light tea flavoring.
More acidic-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thoughts.
So I might have had, I don't know.
Your first cup was this.
I might have had this exact same bean yesterday.
You're kidding.
So
what?
I'm pretty sure. So I, shout out again to Cameron and Anya. We're over at their house the other day.
That's awesome.
And so Cameron, who I've been friends with for 27 years.
That's right. You were telling us.
And so he had mentioned Dunn Bros, and they had also mentioned that they had just recently had a baby, and during the pregnancy, she was not drinking the caffeine. And so Cameron got to do more light roast than normal because she's more of a medium dark roast person. And so I'm pretty sure it was a Dunn Bros light roast coffee that I had yesterday. Yeah. This didn't taste exactly like it, but it's, you know, I think, you know, they're in the family, but I do like this. It was good. 200 giveaway. We have reached 200 reviews. We're actually over 203 now, I think. And so thank you to all of you who left those reviews.
Particularly Slater DeLeon for getting all your buddies to do it.
And
a couple of people had pity on me, it looked like.
Now we're going to start the 300 for 300.
Mm-hmm. No, we're not.
So here's how we're going to give away the things that we promised. So on the December 24th episode, which if you're keeping track at home, that is Christmas Eve. On that episode, that is the episode where we will announce the winners. If you won a prize from your review, which we will be randomly selecting, we're going to pull from all of the reviews we have. And if we draw your name out of that hat, we will read the name that was associated with your review on air and say, so like if there was one that was like Cool Guy 7, we'd be like, hey, Cool Guy 7, you won. And then here's what you would do to receive your reward, your prize. You then have by the end of January to do one of two things. So from December 24th to January 31st, you would either email thinklingspodcast@gmail.com with a mailing address for us to send your prize to, or you would pick up your prize in the bookstore at FBBC. Those are your options. You could also email us or email the bookstore to arrange when you're going to come and get that prize. That would even be, that'd be like maybe the best. But those are how we would give those out.
We'll just put them on the hold shelf for them at the bookstore. They can pick them up.
Sound good?
Sounds glorious.
And on this day, we normally like to do timeless things, but I'm gonna say it. There will now be a moratorium placed on me, not on you, not on either of you, Tim or Andy, but on me, Charlie. I will not say the word review, like in the context of Apple review.
Sure.
For one calendar year.
Oh, wow.
So not until November 30th of 2025 will Charlie get to say, leave us a 5-star review.
You know he put something on his calendar so that the moment it hits that time, he's going to do it.
Oh, you know I did.
You're horrendous.
I would just say that I think that is worth, on its own, your statement right there, a 4.6 out of 5. That's what I would say. If I was giving a review.
But round it up.
I would round it up to 5, yeah. But I would give a good solid 4.6.
That's what a reasonable person would do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's good. 4.6.
Yeah. That's a good number. All right. And then also under announcements, bookstore and publications, Tim might be able to share more, but just want to say you can pre-order Mapping Discipleship on fbbcbooks.com.
Yep.
Anything else you want to say there?
Not right now.
You can still also at that same website buy Israel's Eschatological Enemy by Tim Little, and Song of Songs for Singles by Tim Little, as well as many other wonderful things that we will probably talk about in this episode. Now, that's where we get to the new thing, the runway. Uh-oh. Runway is when we're about to take off in the plane, and we're just going to overview what's going on in the episode.
The runway. I like this.
The overview here is really simple. We're just going to talk about books the whole time.
All right.
So we're going to go around and we're going to talk about either a book that we are wanting to read over Christmas time or a book that we might get for somebody else to read over Christmas time. So anything booksing related, we're discussing in this episode.
I love Booksing Day, by the way. I just love it so much.
Booksing Day, December 25th. Put it on your 26th.
That's
sorry.
Right. That's right.
I'm not co-opting.
There's something else on the 25th we should keep hallowed.
Yes. It's the eve of his birth. And then 1-year-old Jesus is then reading books in his.
Oh, my word.
With all the animals in the barn.
That's, yes. Okay.
All right. So on that note.
Books and business.
Let's talk about some loosely Christmassy books.
So I'm going first. And I have From Eden to Golgotha, Essays in Biblical Theology by R.W.L. Moberly. So I was just at the Evangelical Theological Society's annual meeting, and it's a good time where we can discuss what we're working on, what we're studying with people who are studying similar things. And I've been working through and studying, and you've heard a lot of my speaking about the fear of the Lord. And so it's nice to go to ETS and I can talk to other scholars who are studying the fear of the Lord. In fact, one guy, he wrote his dissertation on the fear of the Lord. I've seen him a couple of times at ETS. And so we had some good conversations. There's an article that I've been looking for, haven't been able to find, where there's a scholar who connected the fear of the Lord to belief in the New Testament. And this is an idea that I've had, and something I may want to produce in like 20 years, write a book like an Old Testament theology. What is like the center of Old Testament theology? The center of Old Testament theology would potentially be the fear of the Lord. Well, then what do you have for like a center of New Testament theology?
Belief.
Yeah.
Okay, so it actually provides a complete biblical theology. So this is just idea stage right now. Maybe it'll get totally blown up, but it was through my study of Abraham and faith and Genesis 15:6. Abraham believed and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And then in Genesis 22, when he's offering up Isaac as a sacrifice, and at the end of that text, I've preached through this on multiple occasions, and I always change the wording of the actual biblical text, because where you'd expect it to say, and Abraham believed, it doesn't. It says, and Abraham feared the Lord.
Well, that's really, I see.
Okay. Because you're
instructing by doing that.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. So what does it mean to believe? Well, he knows that God's going to take care of him. He's going to take care of his son. He doesn't know how, and he's been given something that's completely impossible and illogical, but he believes. And so, well, what does that actually look like in the Old Testament? He fears God. So interesting, in my conversations at ETS, Moberly, is the guy that I was told actually took a similar view. He's the one that connects fear of the Lord and belief. And so I started hunting around, and one of the books is From Eden to Golgotha, Essays in Biblical Theology, which is a group of articles which he's written. And guess what two of them are? Chapter one is Did the Serpent Get It Right? I'm not sure what that one's about, but whatever. Chapter two is Abraham's Righteousness, Genesis 15:6. Okay, so in other words, what is Moberly picking up on? Abraham's statement of faith in Genesis 15:6. And then chapter 3 is the earliest commentary of the Akedah. The Akedah is the binding of Isaac. So Genesis 22. So it looks like he's actually gone on a very similar journey as I have, where it's Abraham and the study of Abraham and the fear of God as pointing forward to a New Testament theology of belief. So anyway, I'm interested and looking forward to getting this book. His fourth chapter is the Shema.
Hey.
Yahweh is One, the translation of the Shema. So similar to myself, how the Shema is like the foundation of the Christian faith. The Lord alone exists. The Lord alone is the one whom we trust. The Lord alone is the one whom we believe in. The Lord alone is the one whom we fear. So he seems to be doing a similar thing. So From Eden to Golgotha, Essays in Biblical Theology by Moberly. I'm looking forward to getting into this book a little bit this Christmas break.
Have you already acquired?
No, I actually have. There's an ETS sale, so I was able to order it. And buying books at ETS and then having to haul them home is somewhat undesirable. And so the publishers will often offer good discounts and free shipping. So I capitalized on one of those things. And this book is one of the ones on the way.
Another passage for you to consider.
Yeah.
Early in Deuteronomy. So before the Shema,
yeah,
when he's like recounting the history of leaving Sinai and then they, you know, first generation not going in and then dying in the wilderness, that whole interchange where he talks about you're going to leave from Horeb, it's going to take you 14 days to get to Kadesh Barnea, and you're going to go in and take the land. And that's where they send the spies, and they come back. And what happens?
They're afraid
of the people in the land. And when he retells that story in Deuteronomy, he says, you rejected and you did not believe the Lord. So it's they're afraid of the other people, and they're not believing God.
Right.
So like they're fearing, believing something else.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Because I remember you did the Fear of the Lord season one, and yeah. you talked about those two fears in that passage. I didn't catch the belief. That's really
good. There's one use in there, which is the MN, like the
mm-hmm. to believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Anyway, so yeah, haven't acquired, but it's on the way.
It's on the way.
Are you going to read that on December 26th?
I don't know. We'll see. So I'm working on several projects, and this one is a little lower on the list because I'd see this as something I would write in 15, 20 years or something like that.
Put it on the calendar for 2030. Well, no, 40. Math is hard.
Words and math are hard. So, okay. So for my first book, well, I'll recommend a blog. There's a blog that you could read some articles on called andysterns.net. I'm just
sounds like an interesting fellow.
It is. I will say just to update, because normally during Books and Businesses, when we talk about these things, and this is kind of like an extended Books and Business, yesterday when we're recording was the 1 year anniversary of Robin going to heaven. And so I wrote a blog post that recounts my experience a couple weeks before that of going to hospice for the first time since she died, which actually was the second time. We'd dropped off some Christmas presents then. And I thought it was a helpful reflection for me. It was one of those things where I didn't know what I would write on the 1 year. And then Melissa was like, hey, I'm praying for you, because she knew it was coming and she thought I should write something. And then drop the kids off at grandma and grandpa's, and to get back on the interstate, the hospice house is right there. I'm like, well, I'll stop by. And you guys have had this happen where you're working on something to write and it's just like a slog. And then other times you sit down at the keyboard and it just like comes out almost in full form, hardly any editing. And that was one of those. So that got posted on Friday. And then a friend of the blog, Tim Challies, put it up on A La Carte today, which was really encouraging to see. And it's been humbling too, because I think I like to write, but anything I write about Robin gets way more interest, which is good. It's very good. So anyways, if you're looking for something to read about life and death, that's good. But I'm going to recommend a book called The Treasure Principle by Randy Alcorn. And this is about using money and how you should use it in light of eternity. Melissa has read this, and she actually read through it with our kids. And so I've got some great, we're trying to teach them about stewardship of money. And so we've got some great stewardship ideas about like dispersing money to them and then having them write down how they spend it. And then like talk to them about, hey, what'd you use this for? But this book comes highly recommended. I have not read it yet, but I want to read it. It's only 100 pages and it's like a little tiny book. So it's totally manageable, but it has a lot to do with how do you handle your money? How do you use it? And how do you use it in light of eternity? And so I'm very interested and excited to read it. She said it was really good. I think when you're a Christian and you don't have any money, you're just not, you know, bills are hard and you've got like maybe 10 kids and they're all in different like instruments and lessons and stuff. It's really hard to handle like
car payments,
you know? Yeah. It's like you got car payments and stuff like that. It is hard to know what to do with your money. And so you kind of think like, man, what do I do with my money? And so I think he addresses some of those things. But then what I would say is if you're a Christian and you're doing okay, this is a book you should read because you probably have more opportunity to make the most of your money, than some other Christians. So anyways, I'm curious about it. I don't have any input on it because I haven't read it. I started it and it sounds very interesting. I think it's just going to be like a biblical study on wealth and using it. So The Treasure Principle. And how does this connect to Christmas? Well, you give gifts at Christmas, so maybe this will help you give gifts.
Yeah.
Woo.
So same questions. Have you already acquired?
I have. I have the ebook.
Yep. Okay. Are you planning to read that on the 26th?
I am planning to read it over Christmas break. So okay. That could take place on the 26th. I'm so overly busy. I said yes to way too many things this semester. I have not literally sat down and read a book for 4 weeks and it's killing me, but this is like a flexing my discipline muscle. Do course prep. Don't do other things.
Yep.
But I'm telling you, as soon as I get that final grade in, I am just going to like read all the time. So
love it. All right. So my brother, Michael, if you're listening to this, which you're definitely not, stop listening. If you know my brother, Michael, don't tell him this. So
this is so great. I love
horrendous.
This. I love this so much, Charlie.
So, I this year am going to give books to everybody. Like, I don't think I'm going to give a gift to someone that's not a book.
Ooh. But what if they're not a reader, Charlie?
Then they can become one.
This is so great. I love it.
Yeah. Like, it's a gift that just keeps on giving. Like, it's an activity. You're giving them an object that they can reread again. You're giving them a book that they can maybe give to somebody else on a booksing day in the future. So there's so many great things about giving books. Now, like, I understand not everybody is like as desirous of being a reader. But I want to encourage all of my friends and family to be readers.
This is just like taking a page out of Paul's leadership principles in the book of Philemon, where he basically paints Philemon into a corner. Like, you've got to do that. And so you're just giving them books. So what are they gonna do? They have to read it.
I've been giving my mom and my brother books for Christmases and birthdays for like 3 years now.
Excellent.
And I'm not sure if they've read, I know they've read one or two of them, but not all of them. and so the book that I've got two books that I'm going to recommend, maybe give to my brother. They are more of like a children's, like I would say young adult style, but there's obviously a theme that connects them, which would be like outdoors. And so if you have a young boy who likes the outdoors and adventure, these would be kind of in that frame. I don't think either of them have like directly questionable material. I've read them both, but it's been a long time. So just, you know, for a dad, if you're thinking about this, you know, you might want to screen it first. But probably my first favorite book when I was a kid, it's My Side of the Mountain. It's about a young boy who leaves his suburban home, runs away from home. So maybe that's not a good theme. But he goes to like live, I think it's like the Catskills.
What's the world?
And he like tries to survive out in the wilderness.
New York?
Yeah, I think it takes place in New York.
Tim, it's like your stomping ground.
And he...
Ish.
I don't want to give all of it away, but he... So yeah, he goes, he gets on the bus, he goes out in the middle of nowhere, he tries to live there. It's a good adventure-y, like young boy, young adult type of a thing. And as a young boy, probably like 9, 10, 11, 12, I read, this is a book I read multiple times. So My Side of the Mountain by Jean Craighead George. And then another one that would be like one step of maturity above that one, where I feel like the character in My Side of the Mountain is like a boy. Then there's Hatchet by Gary Paulsen.
Oh,
which is a teenager, I believe, who gets in a plane accident.
Yep.
And then is forced to survive out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm familiar with that one. So I've heard of that,
because I think Evan would really enjoy that one.
Both of them are outdoorsy young boys books. And I think a young gal might enjoy them, but it's geared towards like a 10 to 14 year old young boy. And I have read Hatchet. And I do believe both of them are a part of a series. And I think there's a series of five with the same main character of Hatchet from Gary Paulsen. But his, I think, are a little, they're a step up in maturity as far as the direct things that are addressed, I believe. But so I think the themes of the outdoor survival, I'm pretty sure my brother's read both of these already. But so there's maybe like a nostalgic, but then an outdoorsy type of a part of it. So I'm planning to books those to my brother for Christmas.
Yeah, Hatchet, I've heard of before.
Yeah.
And I've considered acquiring a copy and have yet to do so, though. I think it'd be a good book for my kids.
Yes.
It's a classic. So
I guess I'm going to just ask this on air. If I gave my list of books that I'm planning to get for people, can you order them for me through the bookstore?
Most of them probably. Just depends on a lot of factors.
Yeah. Cause I'd,
you read some weird stuff that's not necessarily Christian. So
like
both of those books are not technically Christian books. They're just fiction.
The Odyssey and the Iliad aren't Christian.
I know. I'm not dissing them. I'm just saying that they are not my normal publishers that I order from.
Not a normal vendor.
Right.
That brings up an interesting question. If you could create some sort of an online form and we could list like our books we recommend, and put links, and if people want to order them from our social media,
it's a lot of administration.
We have done that in the past, where I think seasons 1 and 2, maybe season 3, I did make a web page, and if we did have it at FBBC Books, it was linked so they could go there. I haven't done that for a while because it's fairly cumbersome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my second book is 4-Hour Good Always, Studies on the Message and Influence of Deuteronomy in Honor of Daniel Block. So Daniel Block is a scholar I have appreciated. I've agreed with him on several just exegetical issues. He's an exegete, so he has commentaries on Ezekiel. He has, oh goodness, now I'm blanking out. I probably should have looked and prepared this, but it's like Exodus, and he's written a lot. He has a book on worship that I really like. And in his exegesis of several passages, he would take, I would say, a minor view, which I have found myself in agreement with. So, for example, I've done a lot of study in the Song 7:10, Your Desire Will Be for Your Husband. Like, he's the only person, and I found this way, way after I came to my understanding of text, he's like the only person that agrees with my view. And so when I found him, I was like, wow. And he's not the only one. There's a couple of others. But as far as like recent scholars are concerned, he's like the only one. So I often like his stuff. Now, to note, this is not written by him. It's written in honor of him. This is like a Feshrift, but it's a compilation of lots of different scholars who are writing on issues connected with Deuteronomy. So one of them is on the Shema. I'm interested in that one. Jason DeRucci has an article, Counting the Ten, An Investigation into the Numbering of the Decalogue. I'm kind of interested in that article. People are like, they make a big deal about the Ten Commandments, but they're oblivious to that there's a Jewish rendering of the Ten Commandments, there's a Catholic rendering of the Ten Commandments, and there's a Protestant rendering of the Ten Commandments. So kind of funny, what are the Ten Commandments? And you have three different views. So I kind of prefer the Jewish numbering as opposed to the Protestant numbering. I think the Catholic rendering is just goofy because they're reading their theology into it. But anyway, that's one of the articles. There's a whole bunch of articles in here. Some of them have to do with the fear of the Lord. So Richard Schultz has an article, Fear God and Keep His Commandments, Ecclesiastes 12, and an examination of intertextual relationships between Deuteronomy and Ecclesiastes. Yes. So there's a lot of articles in here that I'm really interested in. So I ordered this book and I'm looking forward to diving into it during Christmas break. And my first two books that I'm going through here are both kind of ones I'm interested in. I don't imagine that many other people or our listeners will be, but there are a couple of books that are out there. Charlie, you'd be interested maybe, particularly in some of the Ecclesiastes stuff. But that is my second book.
My second book is Skipping Christmas by John Grisham. Have either of you read that?
No, never heard of it.
So
yeah, same.
I'm going to talk about a movie, but I'm not going to recommend a movie. Have either of you seen Christmas with the Cranks?
No.
I think so.
Okay. It at one time, it's been a regular, the problem is there's like one scene in it that makes it not recommendable, but it's a story about a guy who decides that he's going to skip Christmas one year because his daughter goes off to work in the Peace Corps. And so she's not going to be home at Christmas and it's just not going to be the same. Hmm. So his name is Luther Crank and his wife's name is Nora Crank. The movie has Tim Allen in it and it is quite funny, minus the one scene. But
I have seen this.
Yeah, you've seen
The food's falling out of his mouth.
Because he gets Botox. It's so good. There's just some really funny moments. In the movies that I've seen many, many times throughout the years, there was one time I was watching it, this would have been, you know, years ago with Robin, and I hate to give this away, so if you don't want to hear spoilers, go to the next book. But what happens is he saves all his money he would normally spend on Christmas, buys a cruise to the Caribbean for him and his wife, and then they don't decorate, they're like doing a like protest. They're not going to do anything with Christmas. And so what happens is their decision ends up affecting the entire neighborhood. And Luther ends up spending all this money on a cruise and he can't use it in the end. And the movie makes him out to be the bad guy. And it was hard for me to like see it at first. And Robin very lovingly pointed out that's because I'm selfish like him.
It's hilarious.
And I mean that super lovingly. She was gentle and was like, oh. So as I started looking at it through the lens of selfishness, I started to see, oh, he's living for his desires and what he wants. And so then I sort of saw it. But if you ever watched a movie and it's like, yeah, that's like a very faint echo of what the book says. This is why I'm reading this book this year. Does John Grisham in the book highlight Luther's selfishness even more and that just got missed in the movie? So this is like a personal odyssey, a curiosity question. But I'm reading it. I'm like a fifth of the way into it. It's interesting. And it's funny because I know the movie and then I'm reading the book and he's a little bit more of a Scrooge in the book. You know, Tim Allen, he's a pretty non-serious person. So I'm curious about where this goes. I think it sounds fascinating. Your question is, I already own it. I got on Thrift Books for like $6 used. And it's really funny. If you look at the side of the book, it's almost like someone was drilling and a drill went like 1 inch into the book. And so you've got this like perfectly beveled hole into the side of the book. I'm like, oh, I don't know what happened to this book, but hey, all right. So but it was only $6 on Thrift Books. So I'm like, hey, I got it cheap. So anyway, Skipping Christmas, John Grisham. Can't recommend it. Can't recommend the movie Christmas with the Cranks because there is a scene that's inappropriate. But the book, I'm curious about it. So
nice. It is interesting to see when there's like a book written, what gets exalted when it makes it to a screen.
Yeah.
Because most of those decisions are, how can we make it more entertaining?
Yeah. And what will appeal to, I mean, they got a lot of money on the line when they make a movie, so they got to make it appealing.
Yeah.
So I'll give you guys a report. It'll be fun.
All right. So next book, I'm going to do two. I'm doing them two at a time. So these would be books that I want to read over the Christmas season. One of them is directly Christmassy.
Ooh.
So, you know, like we have a Thanksgiving episode. We talk about being thankful and we want to do that. And then Christmas, what would be the emotion of Christmas? You know, joy maybe, thankfulness and graciousness, being giving or giving gifts to people. So there's a lot of good things, but obviously a book that addresses those themes or really addresses the problem of not having those things. I've recommended this before, but it is, I think, the only book that I own that I would say is a directly Christmas virtuous book, which would be
the Bible. I don't Bible. Know.
Like,
no, what? A Christmas Carol.
Oh,
okay.
Of
and
course.
So it's been a few years since I have, which yeah. it is a classic by Charles Dickens. Dickens is recognized as one of the most prominent authors of our modern era here. And I own multiple copies of Christmas Carol. I do think it's a worthwhile gift to other people. And so I want to read that in the next month or so here, just to kind of review back down through. And then,
did you see the new Moody Publishers published a new, like one of the Christmas Carol?
You shouldn't tell me that.
Yeah, you'll have to pick up a copy.
A nice edition. Do you have it at the bookstore?
So it's like a kids edition. So Moody Press has produced A Pilgrim's Progress, and it's like a rabbit, and they tell a story through like rabbits and animals whatever else.
Yeah.
Little Pilgrim's Progress.
Little Pilgrim's Progress.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a hit.
It's really good.
They've sold tons of them, and I've sold several.
Read through it with the kids.
So they did it with.
And they did the same thing with Christmas Carol, and it just came out in September.
And Melissa just got it.
It sold out. It's gone. Like I was going to promo it, and I can't even get it.
Wow.
Yeah. So they said, oh, the next shipment will show up in August. So in other words, they're getting ready for next year.
Oh, man.
But that might be one that you want to look at sometime. But it's more of a kid's edition of
what
A Christmas
animal
Carol.
Is Scrooge?
I don't remember. I didn't even look.
Hey, if you want to borrow the Pilgrim's Progress one, it's really good.
That's cool.
It is really, really
good.
My
kids really liked it. Yeah. Pilgrim's Progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Melissa, like, every time she gets to the end, she cries because it's about the resurrection. It'd be really, really good. Mm. You would like it.
Judah really liked it, and he doesn't read
so
much.
So on that note.
Hey!
on the note of different versions of Christmas Carol. Accompanying my reading of A Christmas Carol, that would be my penance. I don't know if penance is the right word. That's my, you know, I have to do the good thing before then I watch a Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, boy.
And
that's awesome.
That is my...
How is penance not a good word?
Objectively, I feel like a Muppet Christmas Carol is the superior of the versions, because it blends it blends all the wonderful themes that you should think about with Kermit and Miss Piggy and all the wonderful, like, it's just it's more fun version. I think it invites the whole family, whereas like the traditional Christmas Carol, like, not everyone's going to be into the vibe of the, like, traditional movie, but Muppet Christmas Carol hits on all the levels.
You're hilarious.
It's not bad. The Muppet's Christmas Carol is actually pretty decent.
Yeah. So then, the other book, so Christmas Carol is one of the books. The other book that I'd like to read, which I don't know, I really know nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
But
this, so you fully recommend it?
Well, I don't know.
You're horrendous.
Got him.
So it came out this year. It's a very new book. It's from an author that we have all enjoyed already. Leif Unger published a book. I think it was actually like April or May. It's called I Cheerfully Refuse is the title of it. And I don't know what it's about, but Leif Unger is an author that I appreciate. I do think his best book is Peace Like a River. I have read everything, every novel he's published.
Seriously.
Except for I Cheerfully Refuse. And so Peace Like a River is definitely his best book. Always recommend that. But so that is one that I haven't acquired yet, but I'm looking to read over the Christmas time. It's on my fun read list.
I love it. I don't know if I have a fun read. Maybe I should have thought through maybe I'll steal one of yours.
Can I just say, there's like two times you said, maybe I should have thought through. I'm like, this is total classic Tim. Like, it's okay. No, I'm just
books.
They're none of them are fiction
or, you know, biographies or whatever, but that's kind of me. So that's okay.
You're right. Yeah.
You do you, man. You do you.
All right. So my third book is actually Mapping Discipleship. So should be coming out. We received, I don't know if we'll see when it actually gets here. It's always that way when it's
that's
book
a really fun read.
It is. Exactly. It's still an intellectual
I hear
read.
That's a friend of the podcast book also.
Yeah, it is. How about that? Actually,
I'm not a friend of the podcast, just the podcast.
You are the podcast.
So on your recommendation, Charlie, Harry Blumeris, The Christian Mind.
Yeah.
I picked up some of those and my boys and I were starting to read through it, but it's pretty deep. Yeah,
kids
are pretty young.
Yeah, yep.
So I don't think it's going to work so well, but
it's
anyway.
A thank you one for sure.
Right, and
it's the payoff is big, but the threshold is equally mm-hmm. big. Yeah.
Right. So instead,
the
I think
the dais is tall.
So as far as like disciples,
that was awesome. That was fantastic.
As far as like discipleship is concerned, I've been trying to be more intentional about discipling my family, particularly my sons. And my wife, but I meet with people and I talk to them about discipleship and trials but I don't do that with my family, at least that kind of discipleship with my family too much. So the goal would be to pick up copies of Mapping Discipleship for my family. And instead of reading Harry Blumeris's Christian Mind, we'll read through Mapping Discipleship. And I want to talk to my kids about the various texts that we work through and how God works in their hearts. I think that's a really good resource. I've already read through not all of it, but I've spot checked a lot of stuff of it, and I know what it's talking
about. You
haven't
read through all of it, but you had nightmares about it.
And anyway, I'm really looking forward to working through the book itself with somebody, and I figure why not start with my family? And then I intend to work through Mapping Discipleship with other young men whom I'll be discipling for probably quite some time. So if you haven't pre-ordered Mapping Discipleship yet, I strongly recommend picking it up. The last time that I conversed with the publisher, they said a ship date of around December 20th. So it may be here in time for a Booksing Day. We will see. Mapping Discipleship by none other than Charlie Carter is my third book.
I just love that we've now had three books written by Thinklings that have made it into our Christmas reads.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I think it was the very first season, Charlie, you were like, I'm going to read Israel's Eschatological Enemy.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That was good. That was really good.
I do, you know, looking back on that, I really like the design of that cover. Like, I like
it's
that
good.
Book.
Israel's Eschatological
Enemy. I like the size
enemy.
Of it. I like the design of it. Yeah, it's a nice book.
You know, it's funny, that book, I was talking to Dr. Paul, and he's like, yeah, it's in 76 libraries or something like that. I'm like, really? can't believe that book's in that many libraries. And I think it may be that it's being used by people and benefiting. And so praise the Lord, that's the goal.
Yeah.
But it's definitely more of a technical sort of a book.
Yep.
All right. So for my third selection, we're going to have a double duo or a double treble. I have two books, just like you, Charlie, two books. And this is a last minute edition because I was like, oh, I can do two. So I picked up a book. I'm so excited about this. I'm so excited, listener. You have no idea. If you know me, you know why I'm so excited about this.
You're hilarious.
It's called The Personality Brokers: The Strange History of Myers-Briggs and the Birth of Personality Testing by Merv Emery.
Wow. That is interesting.
I started reading this and I am like two chapters in and it is glorious. So listen, this is what it is. Myers-Briggs is the, well, okay. So we had a listener email come in about psychology and I really hope we get back to talking about Christianity and psychology because I have so many things to say about that topic. But here's what I would say. Personality tests, if I am remembering things correctly, they really start with Carl Jung's archetypes. So Carl Jung is, so if you're thinking of like psychology, it all starts with Sigmund Freud. And psychos just means soul, logos is word or the study of, and so the study of the soul. And Freud is essentially talking about dreams and repressed memories and sexual tension, and that explains why you are the way you are. Then you have, you know, he's an atheist. You have another atheist who says, hey, you're just a machine and you can change your behavior. So B.F. Skinner, school behaviorism. You have Carl Rogers, who he starts out, he's like sort of comes from a weirdo Christian background, but then he goes more down like a spiritism or like an atheism path. And he develops a school of unconditional positive regard, where essentially you just make a safe space for people to unearth their feelings and they sort their problems out. Now, really, honestly, that one is the closest to the Christian word terminology of unconditional love, where like you can tell me whatever you want and I love you no matter what, but then I'm going to help you think through my he won't do any positive instruction. He just wants you to unearth your feelings and then you sort them out yourselves. The other guy is Carl Jung, who starts off as an atheist and then he becomes this weird, I can't remember if it's like an animism or something. It's like super strange, almost new agey, but this is, you know, these two guys are in the last century. So anyways, I got Carl Jung's book. Oh, I can't remember what it's called now. It's on my desk at home and I meant to read it. And what I did is I skimmed through the table of contents and guess what he is known for? He's the one who develops the language of introversion and extroversion.
Oh.
He's the guy that it comes back to. And so he's like all personalities have a movement either internal or external. And so he takes like four factors and he develops this lingo that now that's how we describe people.
So when we talk about somebody being introverted or extroverted, mm-hmm. that doesn't come from the Bible?
No. It's interesting, though. So, and just like psychology makes observations of how humans behave. And when they make observations or they take a poll or do a study, the observational studies may be accurate data. But as soon as they explain why, they're just missing the mark. Yep. Because they're not explaining why from a biblical worldview.
Right.
Okay. That's all background. And hopefully we can have a whole episode to talk about that because I got more things to say. But the personality brokers, now all that's been going on, Myers-Briggs is I only read a little bit and it was like 6 weeks ago. It's a mother-daughter duo who came up with a questionnaire. And they were sort of loosely studying psychology. And then how you answered those questions would categorize you into these four camps. I think it's like sanguine and melancholic. And anyways, it's a personality test. And so in like 1900 or whenever, 1920, when they were doing this at home, they started selling this test. And you could take the test and it would categorize your personality. And listen, here's the problem with personality studies. And this is where, if I ever went back to do a doctorate, I half think I'd want to do it on personality tests from a Christian worldview. When you do a personality test, you categorize the person's behaviors and desires. And then you say, this is who you are. The minute you say who you are, without realizing it, you are labeling them and then answering the question why, even if you don't intend to. And you have Christians everywhere who are taking predictive index, Myers-Briggs, disk inventory, all kinds of
stuff.
There's
a ton of them.
And here's the thing. The CCEF guys have done a little bit of work in this, and they're saying they're not, and I would agree, they're not terrible in that you're learning, maybe you learn some trends about yourself or whatever, but the minute it becomes your identity, it's no different than saying, I'm not of Christ, I'm of Paul, or I'm of Paulus. It's like, it's an identity problem. Right. So anyways, this has been like a sticking point in my life. And I thought, well, like, what's the value? So anyways, I was reading this. Oh man, this lady is like a reporter, and she goes undercover and gets Myers-Briggs certification without telling anyone. She's like a skeptic of this. And in these training sessions, they're like, look, you can't call it this. You have to call it this. Don't speak like this. You got to say this. You got to tell them they need these things. It's super sketch. And so anyways,
it's like a sales pitch type of thing.
It is. And it's like, we've got to have people think this so that they'll buy our product. It's totally. So anyways, I've only gotten like a chapter in. I'm hoping over Christmas break to do some more work. Just came out in 2019. So it's like a newer thing. I'm really interested in this book. Mm. And so anyways, I can't recommend it yet. I don't know what's gonna be like, The Personality Brokers. And then here's your double trouble. Okay. Here's your second recommendation. Okay. I am also reading, I bought this 3 years ago, 2 years ago, The Story of the Trap Family Singers. It is written by Maria Trapp. So the Maria from The Sound of Music,
right?
They made a movie of their life, and this is her actually telling the story. I'm like, oh, fascinating, because we enjoy The Sound of Music. So I'm going to read that. I don't know if I'll get that one done. I don't know what all of these I'll get done, but that one just sounded interesting. This is a debate that's popped up in our family. Is The Sound of Music a Christmas movie?
So, okay. I was going to ask that question.
Okay. Go for it, Charlie. What do you think?
So I don't particularly care for The Sound of Music.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I actually made this exact comment a few days ago at a family Thanksgiving.
Oops.
No, that's not what I said. Oh. This is what I'm about to say. So I did not utter the word oops. If it were more thematic, and what I mean by that is if it was in German and I had to read it in English subtitles, I would enjoy that more than what it is.
Oh,
so like
word.
They're singing in German, and then like I have to, like, I think that would be much more pleasurable to me. But so anyway,
there's a reason you weren't in charge of the movie production.
So what I'll ask a question to answer your question.
Okay.
Why would it be a Christmas movie?
So I don't know. I'm new to liking the movie. Let me explain. Yeah. Can I tell you my backstory? So 2 years ago, Abby's like, can we watch Sound of Music? And I'm like, Robin and I were not fans. And we're like, okay. And so if you look at my Instagram 2 years ago, I've got this great video of me like eye rolling and not excited about it. So I post that, and then we watch the movie, and I found myself strangely enjoying it. And I felt like, what's wrong with me? And I was like, oh man, this is, now here's the thing.
What's wrong with me?
What I found, and I think this is just biblical, okay? Not liking the movie. When I was young, my mom liked this movie. Mom, if you don't, I'm sorry, but this is what I remember. She liked this movie, and we watched it like every year. And I think it would usually be on TV around Christmas.
Yeah.
So I think I probably watched it 10 times growing up, and then I just never watched it again. And so probably the first time I saw it as an adult was like 2 years ago. And I couldn't figure out why. I kind of enjoyed it a little, and I didn't want to tell anyone. It was like I had to hide it. And so then like 2 weeks ago, Abby and Evan are like, let's watch Sound of Music. I'm like, okay. And so I made another like video of me eye rolling and all this, and Evan's thumbs up and Abby's thumbs up and Melissa's thumbs up. And then she slaps me for not liking it, but it was fake. I enjoyed the movie.
Mm.
And I don't know. Maybe I lose my man card. Maybe I lose my siblings card.
If I go to Google and I type in.
But I don't think I have a dog in the fight if it's Christmas. I just found out this is like a debate.
If you type it in and you type, is The Sound of Music.
There's nothing Christmas in it.
If you start looking at the autofill responses, mm-hmm. Is The Sound of Music based on a true story? Is The Sound of Music a Disney movie? Is The Sound of Music a musical? Is The Sound of Music on Disney Plus? So number five, is The Sound of Music a Christmas movie? So it is the five most popular response.
Okay.
AI doesn't give me an answer.
I would say if you say it's a Christmas movie, there's nothing Christmassy in it. But it always air. It used to on network TV air around the Christmas season, so I think that's why people think it.
Okay, so here I so clicked I would into be a
agnostic on the question.
So the song "My Favorite Things" seems to reference some Christmassy.
Oh, it
things.
Does. That's
so
right.
So snowflakes that yep. stay on your nose and eyelashes, which is like okay.
Yep.
Brown paper packages tied up with strings.
Yes. Okay.
Silver, white, winters that melt into springs.
Okay.
So it seems like it's a Christmassy theme and
okay.
one of the most popular songs.
Okay. And I would just say I'm kind of agnostic on it, but it is interesting. So, but I thought, oh, this would be like, why, is this true? What is this? So that's my book. I'm going to read it.
Alrighty. I don't know how many rounds we're doing. I think I'll say this is my last round. And so I've got two literature classics that I may or may not gift, but I also just want to read myself. One of them I do already have, and I've never made it through. I've attempted, never made it through.
Ooh.
And then another one, which I own other books by this classic author that I have read and enjoyed, but I haven't purchased this particular one yet.
I'm in great suspense right now, the way you're telling this.
Yeah. So the first one is The Brothers K. by Fyodor Dostoevsky.
The Brothers Karamazov.
Yeah.
By Dostoevsky.
And so I have that. I have it in audio version as well. It's just massive and it takes a lot. And so I've started it and just said, nah, not the time.
Same.
So that is a book that
it was interesting, like the guilty conscience thing in the first couple chapters, but I...
And then, because I feel like that's one huge. That you have to... read it multiple times to really like delve into it.
It's like, a commitment book.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
And it's huge and it's long and it's thinky. Then the other one would be by Ernest Hemingway, A Farewell to Arms, which is a story of an Italian officer in World War I. And so both of those are on a lot of like, you know, top 100 books you need to read. And so Brothers K and Farewell to Arms are on a lot of big lists. And so I just kind of picked those off. I think A Farewell to Arms is much more accessible on a reading level.
I have that
than
one.
Brothers K.
I thought about reading it, but
how long is that one?
Like, it's like a romance. Like he meets some nurse.
Yeah. A lot of Hemingway kind of has that to it.
I forgot a book. Anyway, we're on our third round. So I'll list one more.
Yeah. And so, and there's some other sundry things here, but, yeah, those are probably, I don't know if I will, I mean, I won't finish Brothers K in that time period. But so my first interaction with Ernest Hemingway was there's a movie version of The Old Man and the Sea, which is about a guy catching a big fish and then the sharks eat his fish and nobody believes that he caught the fish when he gets home.
That's the original fish story.
Yeah, I remember watching that like with my brother and dad, like The Old Man and the Sea, not realizing that that's a movie version of a classic literature piece by one of the most famous authors ever, Ernest Hemingway. And so, but so for a guy, like if you just want like a guy's guy, like every man should read this book, you get rid of all that silly romance stuff. You know, this is a guy and a fish. It's a lot like Moby Dick, you know, let's talk about killing whales. And so that's Old Man and the Sea. But then, you know, Farewell to Arms is, I think, a more broadly popular to everyone of one of Hemingway's works. So I don't know if I'd recommend. And then there's For Whom the Bell Tolls is another Hemingway classic. And yeah, that one's romancy and has some scenes that you probably don't want to have everybody read through.
So I have some other stuff here, but I've already done three. How many are we supposed to be doing here?
I don't know.
Whatever you, I'm going to do one more because I thought
what we said off air, at least one.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'm going to do one more round and then we have the bonus round that the listener just doesn't know about yet.
Well, they know now.
And that's me. So if you want to do one more, I'll do one more and I'll do bonus round and we can have Charlie's Devo.
So there's a new book, Finding Beauty in the Bible, an aesthetic commentary on the Song of Songs. So it's a new commentary on the Song of Songs published by Whiffenstock. I picked it up. Few other titles I'm looking to check out. The Message of Wisdom by Daniel Estes. He's an Old Testament scholar, and it's in the vein of literature I like to read and stay abreast in. State of Old Testament Studies. So what's going on in Old Testament Studies, just released by Baker Academic. And so that's another one that I'm going to take a look at. And then Prose and Poetry Through Time by Stephen Hubscher. And this is a study of the Hebrew language in Zechariah.
Mm.
And it's a very technical title, but it's written by a friend. He was a classmate of mine at Baptist Bible Seminary, Stephen Hubscher. Oh. So, boom, I'm done.
Well done, sir. And I just have to say that I didn't think this would make me feel comforted. But you finally mentioned Song of Songs. I was like, oh, now it's a complete episode. I feel like we've had a complete episode. Tim finally mentioned the song. Okay. So for my last book, I'm going to finish Lumen. So I set it aside because I was doing some stuff. I'm probably like 5 hours away from finishing it. It's pretty interesting. The romance, I think I've not read a romance in a long time, and there's a little too much of it for my taste. But like the whole Mems and like the altars, and it is interesting. It is interesting. So I'm gonna finish it. Now here's the thing. I was flipping through our reviews. And this one says, "Love it!" exclamation point from November 20th. And then the statement just says, "My friend made me do this."
Oh yeah.
And
I loved this person because they got a whole pile of them.
No. That's not it.
Oh.
It's her, the name is JJ Fisher 788. JJ Fisher is the author of Lumen and Caller. Friend of Melissa Troutman, who's promoted our stuff. So I'm wondering if this is the author of the book. So if it is, like, hey, that's pretty cool. So JJ Fisher, if you listen. Hey, that's awesome. Okay, so that's it. That's all I got for my books. But now, bonus content.
What sound should we make for bonus, Tim?
Ooh, make it, Tim.
I have no, that's not my department.
That's it. It's not my department. That is the sound. If we do bonuses, here's a bonus episode, Tim. It's not my department.
That is not my department.
So every year we do Christmas recommendations.
I just wanted them to have a good, clear recording of it. That's...
Bonus round. That is our department.
That is our department, Charlie. So every year we would recommend books at this time. And Melissa was telling me that she had, so either her or Brenna have the most children's books of anyone I know. And I'm not sure who it is. I haven't seen Brenna's collection. I've heard it's rather large. But Melissa has a three-level bookshelf that's like 8 cubbies wide, and it's just full of good books. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is I had never read children's books. The only time, until I had kids, but the only time I've ever actually bought one on purpose is when I bought you the Curious George one as a joke. That's it. And then you bought it for me. And so like, that's literally my exposure to kids' books. What I've found is it's a whole subgenre. You read it with your kids and it gives you talking points. And that's what I didn't understand. Sometimes I read these things and I'm like, it's just a kid's book. But like sitting with her and reading these regularly, I see where there's a serious opportunity for a component of discipleship for your young kids this way. I had no clue.
Yeah.
So she told me, and our kids don't listen to this, so this is okay. I'm not letting anything out. She has like 25 different Christmas books, and so she's going to wrap one up every day and put it under the tree leading up to Christmas, and the kids will unwrap it. I think that's what it is. Or maybe she'll just put it under the tree, and they'll read a book a day on the way to Christmas, and they're all Christmas themes. So I said, hey, do you have like 3 you would recommend that I could tell our listeners about? And she's like, oh yeah. And so she was like writing up this whole review. So I've got 3 books for you. The first one is An Otis Christmas. Mm. And this is not a Christian book per se. It's just got beautiful artwork. Yes.
So we sell Otis in the bookstore.
Okay.
We'll have several of these in our store.
It's really cute.
I can't remember if we have a Christmas
Otis
one.
Looks like a lawnmower or a tractor.
He's a tractor. So he's this, he's a tractor, and he's a scared little tractor, and he has to brave a snowstorm to find help for a horse who falls ill on Christmas Eve. It has nothing to do with the true meaning of Christmas,
but
it
makes practical sense. You know, if it's a diesel, you know,
exactly.
It's cold and
you know,
they don't like to start if it's
exactly.
cold.
Exactly. And I think probably the little kids would get that as they read it. They would just know that.
Yeah.
Or the ones from a farm. But it's a cute story, and it does have some ideas like selflessness and bravery, but that's fine. That's the first one. The second one is Christmas Carols for the Kid's Heart.
Oh, cool.
And this one is written by Bobby Wolgamuth and Johnny Erickson Tada. Now, Wolgamuth, her brother married
Nancy Lee DeMoss.
And so the two of them teamed up, and this one's cool because It's okay. Come on.
I would 100% have pronounced that Wohlgemuth.
Well, maybe that's how it is. It's no, little it's stories about like this is Angels Carols. Of Pernahai, and then it's got the song. And so it's cool. Kind of like, here's the song, here's some story about it, and then if you are musical, you can go and play the song right now as a family. Mm-hmm. And so this is a really cool book I didn't even know anything about.
Who published that?
This is Crossway. Oh, Crossway. And it's in conjunction with Focus on the Family somehow. And it's if you go to hymnsforkids.com, that's where you can find it. So it's interesting. So the back says, kids will be inspired by the true stories of songwriters, connect tenderly with tenderly written devotionals, learn to sing 12 classic Christmas carols, practice piano and guitar with printed music, understand more about God's character and grace, memorize Bible verses with each hymn, and learn to pray along with their singing. And then it has like stuff that adults will learn too. So that's kind of a cool activity family book. And then the last one, When Santa Learned the Gospel.
Ooh, that's spicy.
So I've never heard of this. I've never heard of this. And Melissa says every time she reads it, she cries at the end. And she got it recommended from her pastor, Danny, who says the same thing. He's like, I can't read this book without crying. And so at the very, it's basically Santa learning about the gospel of grace and not having to work for good. So any, I haven't read it. I haven't read it. I'm getting, so.
That seems super cool.
Yeah. So I thought, so I think for me, she said, I've used these books in my classroom because many of the students, well, she said, even though they were at a Christian school, she taught at a Christian school, they celebrated Santa. So these kids would come in talking about Santa. And so she was looking for a way to easily transition from, yeah, Santa, but what about the gospel? And so this was a really great tool in the classroom because a lot of, I think it's just like a church. Sometimes a Christian school is a mixed bag of who is there and what levels they're at for discipleship. So
we're not going to answer this question.
Okay.
But I'm going to throw it out there. Should Christians do Santa?
I think our episode's gone long enough.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you know, okay.
I think we're pretty clear to say, you know, that's like a cultural thing. There's a real Saint Nick. I mean, they just read Letters to Father Christmas, and I've never read it. And that sounds really cool. So anyway, so that's your bonus, listener. If you're looking for kids' books that you can read and talk with your kids about things, which honestly, that's like kind of like what we do, just for a kid level. So there you go.
All right. We'll have a final meditation in God's word here. And I said this earlier, we're going to say it in a future episode as well. I do think if I was to tie an emotion to the season of Christmas, I think joy would be the word to use.
To the world.
And yes. And so Philippians chapter 4, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. And it's commanded in multiple places, but there's this command of joy there, which is good. And this is, if there ever was a season to be mindful of the commands of joy and the practice of joy, it would be after you eat turkey to before you open gifts. And but I want to just go down a little bit below that. So Philippians 4:8, finally, my brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And we just talked for an hour about books that we want to read and books that we want to give. And it might seem silly, and you know, silly is good sometimes, but that's what we're exercising, and that's what we're trying to promote, is one avenue that you would pursue what is honorable and good and pure and true is in the reading of good books, in the promotion of good books. And this is just a great time of year to remind yourself that there are good, better, and bests. Is it good to watch a movie with the family over Christmas? Yes, it is. Is there better ways? Like, why don't we talk about the story, you know, as we watch the movie? Or is there a best way of pursuing? And, you know, I think one of the best things that you could do this time of year, we've said this before, is to, you know, get rid of your streaming, get rid of, you know, the entertainment and the culture of Christmas that is about you having fun and getting things, and replace it with the culture of truth. So reading scripture and thinking about what God has done for us in the gift that was the incarnate Son of God. And then along with that, focusing on and thinking about and pursuing joy as a Christian. And we will have an episode coming up where we talk about that. But so in this season of Christmas, think about the things that are true and honorable and just and pure and lovely and commendable and excellent and praiseworthy, starting with the Son of God that comes to be born, and then obviously his word, which is the gospel to us, and then the rest of the things that he has blessed us with, family and the fun of the Christmas season. And so, yeah. Use the Christmas time to think about the things that you ought to think about and then pursue them. And so thanks for listening to our Chronicles of Christmas, and we'll see you next week on the next episode of the Thinklings Podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.